Hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, that's a rarity.
Later this spring, May 18th, in fact, the Northwest will mark the 40th anniversary of the eruption of Mount St. Helens. And a museum in Spokane has kicked things off with a new exhibit, plus an online effort to collect memories. And, of course, our resident historian Felix Bunnell, who was once an 11-year-old volcano enthusiast, is here to tell us all about it. Brought to you by the King County Library System.
Yeah, speaking from personal experience, 1980 really was a terrific time to be an 11-year-old in the Northwest. And the 40th anniversary of that May 18th eruption, it's a real milestone. You know, working on history projects like this the last 25 years, I found the 40th is a real sweet spot for commemorating events. You know, it's long enough ago that it really feels like history, and the traumatic parts, you know, the fact that 57 people died in that eruption, those traumatic parts are not as traumatic. And 40 years is recent enough that significant numbers of people are still alive who remember it. That second part was really true. We marked the 40th anniversary of the World's Fair back in 2002. 10 years later for the 50th, so many people had passed on in that decade. So this is a really important year. So I was thrilled to visit the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture. It's the MAC over in Spokane a few days ago, and toured two new exhibits there. One's about Pompeii, the city in Italy that was wiped out by Vesuvius back in 79 AD. We didn't cover that here at Cairo.
No.
The other's about Mount St. Helens. Now, those disasters have their similarities, but MAC curator Freya Liggett says there was only one person who wrote about what happened at Pompeii, the Roman figure known as Pliny the Younger.
This Pompeii story has a lot of its human element came to us through that one written record, whereas Mount St. Helens, we have tens of thousands of experiences, and you know that's what we're attempting to capture now and kind of see, like, what is the value of that 2,000 years from now? What will those experiences be like for exploring Pacific Northwest history?
And so the show at the MAC is called Mount St. Helens Critical Memory 40 Years Later. It's packed with social and cultural memories of Mount St. Helens from people all over Washington State. You can almost call it sort of volcano pop culture. There's jars of ash collected by just regular people, commercially made souvenirs, terrific photos of people like USGS scientist David Johnson, and perhaps my very favorite Northwest person of all time, Spirit Lake Lodge owner Harry Truman.
I lived up there 50 years. I had some people yesterday ask me why the hell I stay there and what am I doing up there. That's my life. Spirit Lake and Mount St. Helens is my life, folks. I've lived there 50 years. It's a part of me. That mountain and that lake is a part of Truman, and I'm a part of it.
You know, that guy is just mythic. He famously refused to leave in spite of the danger, and he ultimately perished in the eruption. And I didn't get that as an 11-year-old, but I totally get it now. I wouldn't leave Spirit Lake Lodge either. But in honor of Harry Truman, the MAC exhibit has a ton of really cool audio artifacts and sort of a jukebox interactive where you can play songs like this one by Ron Allen.
If I leave my home, I'd die in a week. This mountain's where I buried my wife. I've got plenty of booze, and there's fish in the creek. I'm staying here the rest of my life. Oh, Harry Truman, your Spirit Lake is gone. But oh, Harry Truman, your spirit will live on and on.
Yeah, I have that one.
I admit, when I was playing this song a couple days ago, I got kind of choked up listening to that song because, again, it's just a mythic guy. Now, I knew there were professional musicians making novelty songs. There were journalists interviewing people like Harry Truman and regular people taking photos of the ash cloud. Freya Liggett told me about one unusual case that involved a mom and three kids from Seattle driving in their car between Moses Lake and Spokane as that monstrous ash cloud turned the day to darkness in eastern Washington.
The kids had a cassette recorder with them, so they were recording the radio reports, and I remember doing this as a kid. You just kind of recorded not just what was on the radio, but your conversations. And he found that, I think, shortly after his mother passed away.
So we have a sample of what those kids, and one of whom was actually Chris Ballew, who would grow up to become a member of Presidents of the United States and is now Casper Baby Pants. Here's some of what they captured on their tape recorder from Spokane Valley radio station, KZUN.
I just went outside and took a look at my car. And it's starting to fall right now. The ash is starting to fall out here in the valley, just very lightly, just little bitty, teeny specks. Looks like puffed up grains of sand, only it's black. And the cloud is now really moving into the valley, and you can, if you look out your window there, you can see it. You want to stay inside, though, because there are caustic chemicals in that ash, and we don't know how intense they are. Once they reach us, they've gone a few miles and the chemicals may have dissipated a little bit, but you want to be safe. You always want to be safe, so stay inside and just have yourself a good day. Stay tuned into KZUN. We'll keep you up to date.
This is the fastest day I've ever seen.
Just now hearing that reminds me of Fire Sign Theater. I don't know if you ever listened to that in the 70s. Anyway, I hadn't been able to identify the announcers who were on the air that day, but I find this kind of live and local radio coverage of breaking news to be unsurpassed for understanding the mood of a particular time. The newspaper clippings, even people's personal stories, don't do this as well as radio. Of course, I'm biased about that.
Yes.
Here's another clip from KZUN from May 18th, 1980.
Just had a call from a lady who said, what's going on? She was fishing at Loon Lake. They were driving into Spokane, didn't have the radio on, and so we better bring people up to date.
Yeah.
In case they just did tune in or coming in for a camping trip. This, of course, is volcanic ash falling from Mount St. Helens and caused the darkness. If you didn't have your radio on or were watching television or whatever, and this is the result of the darkness. Also, had a report from Fairchild Air Force Base. A man was unpacking his camping gear and walking in toward the wind, so it says do not do that because his eye is full of ash. So this is volcanic ash falling from Mount St. Helens, causing the darkness here in Spokane areas.
Yeah, so I was tuned to Cairo Radio all day back in 1980. I didn't make any recordings of it, or if I did, I lost them. If there's anyone listening this morning who has tapes from Cairo, we would love to hear them, because we're going to do more stories about this as we get closer to the anniversary of the first eruption in late March and the big cataclysmic eruption at the end of May. So.
Yeah,
that's lots to come on that. And we have a link to at our website to where they're collecting memories for this exhibit in Spokane, because they want to hear from everybody all over the state. So.
Now, yesterday you were at the Federal Archives at
yes.
Sam Point, where there was a meeting with some of the tribes. What happened?
Well, you know, a bunch of media people showed up, about members from about 10 different tribes came. There were people from the National Office of the National Archives and Records Administration, and they wouldn't go on the record about anything. Nobody would actually talk to me on tape. They're trying to do a reset. They're trying to say, like, hey, okay, the decision's been made. How do we work together with you tribes to identify what your needs are to have access to this material? Because, again, the tribe's material is unique. There's stuff going back to the 1840s, mm-hmm. 1850s, relating to the creation of these
entities. The newspaper said there are treaties there.
The treaties themselves are actually stored back at the National Archives in College Park, Maryland.
Huh.
There's stuff that's sort of the next step down from treaties, the actual implementation of the treaties or the failed implementation, because the federal government, kind of ironically, made lots of promises to Native tribes that they didn't follow through on.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Natives I talked to yesterday said this is just like that. It's just this sort of the National Archives, they're trying to do a reset, but they haven't quite figured out about how to be transparent, how to share and show the public that they're trying to act in good faith, where the process the last few months has been so messed up. There's a real lack of trust from the tribes to the archives now.
Well, the vibe I got from the Times article this morning is that the decision has been made, and it doesn't matter how many meetings you call with the tribes, the records are leaving.
Yeah, and that's why most of the people there are looking toward Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who's thinking about legal action, who's submitted all his document requests. Also to Secretary of State Kim Wyman, who wants to come up with some kind of alternative. It's a very complicated problem with multiple agencies, multiple entities, levels of government involved, and some kind of solution. I'm confident something will be found, but it might end up being a lawsuit before we get any kind of actual positive
solution. So where does your crusade stand at this point?
I'm all about the truth, you know, and transparency in the American way, as you know. So I'm just working on keeping the story alive and letting people know what's going on, because until the agencies involved figure out what it means to actually have a public process, we have to just work extra hard to get updates on the basic information about what we should know about everything that belongs to all of us, Dave.
All right. Felix Bunnell, who is our artifactivist. Our activist.
I like that.
Historian.
I like that better than postivist. That sounds like
a
spaghetti
pastivist.
Thing.
It's
no, it sounds too starchy for me.
Well, be safe out there.